Imagine like dedicating the first 10, maybe 15 years of your professional life to mastering this highly specific, incredibly demanding physical skill.
Right, just thousands of hours of grinding.
Exactly. You spent all those hours sweating over the smallest details, perfecting your form, building your endurance. You completely tie your professional identity to how hard and how fast you can perform this one single action.
You're basically an elite athlete of your craft, in your own mind anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And then literally overnight, someone installs this massive humming machine right next to you that does exactly what you do.
But you know, 1,000 times faster.
1,000 times faster. And without ever needing to take a single breath, that psychological whiplash is exactly what software engineers are facing right now.
It really is. It's jarring.
So today, we're exploring why the arrival of AI isn't just some, you know, routine tech upgrade. It's an identity crisis. Okay, let's unpack this, because what we're really talking about here is just a wave of existential dread.
Oh, absolutely. The dread is palpable.
You have this massive global workforce of developers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Some of the smartest, most highly compensated people in the modern economy. And they are suddenly staring at their screens, wondering how on earth they're supposed to stay relevant.
Right. When an artificial intelligence can write, debug, and deploy code faster than they can even type it out.
Exactly. So we are looking at a brilliant central metaphor today from our sources that frames this entire crisis. It compares the traditional software engineer to a rower on a massive wooden ship.
And the arrival of AI is, well, it's the sudden installation of a steam engine under the deck.
Yes. It's such a perfect image.
It really is, because it highlights that this is a profound crisis of identity, not just a standard shift in the labor market. I mean, for decades, the engine of the tech industry was muscle power, human cognitive muscle.
Right. Brain sweat, basically.
Exactly. And to understand the sheer shock of this transition, you have to look at the historical parallel of maritime travel. When those first steam engines were dropped into the hulls of ships, it wasn't some gradual transition.
No, it happened fast.
It was an immediate, jarring reality check for anyone whose livelihood depended on the wind or, you know, on rowing. And what makes this perspective so incredibly useful is how calm and analytical it is.
Yeah, it totally cuts through the usual internet doom scrolling.
Right, because the installation of a steam engine isn't a story about the end of the world, and it isn't a story about the end of the voyage either.
So what is it a story about then?
It is a story about a fundamental, irreversible shift in how human beings generate value on that ship. The machine simply doesn't care how hard you work to build your muscles.
Man, that is tough to hear. But, you know, to really grasp why this steam engine of artificial intelligence is causing such a massive disruption, we have to look back at the culture that existed before it.
The culture of the rowers.
Right. We have to understand this grueling, almost monastic environment of the rowers that really defined the first half of the current generation's software engineering careers. The source actually calls it the cult of the rower.
That's a great name for it.
It really is. Historically, engineers measured themselves and were measured by their peers on very distinct axes. The first was just pure raw power.
Right, which in the software world translates to absolute mastery of complex data structures and sorting algorithms.
Yeah, the heavy lifting logic you need to pass those infamous whiteboard interviews.
Exactly. It was the cognitive equivalent of having the strongest back in the boat. You proved your worth by showing you could pull the heaviest oar through the thickest water.
Just brute forcing the math.
Right. You were rewarded for holding these massive, complex architectural diagrams in your head and just grinding through it all.
And then the second axis was perfect form. I mean, this wasn't just about making the code work. It was about making it spotless.
Oh, yeah. The endless debates over style.
Totally. Strict adherence to style guides, elegant design patterns, having absolute religious wars over whether to use spaces or tabs.
The classic spaces versus tabs debate.
Always. But it was about making the stroke look beautiful, you know, and completely synchronized with the rest of the crew. And finally, the third axis, endurance.
And this is the one that really defined the lifestyle of the industry for so long, right?
Oh, without a doubt. The willingness to pull all-nighters, to survive brutal crunch times, to live on cold pizza and energy drinks.
Just out-grinding everyone else on the team.
Exactly. You earned your worth, your salary, and your status by rowing faster, cleaner, and longer than the person sitting on the bench right next to you.
And that created a very specific, deeply ingrained incentive structure. I mean, when you reward raw power, perfect form, and endurance above all else, you build a culture that fundamentally worships the act of rowing itself.
It becomes the whole point.
Right. The exertion becomes the metric of success, and that gets sometimes completely divorced from why the boat is actually moving in the first place.
Yeah.
You end up with a ship full of people who are looking down at their hands.
Obsessed with their grip on the oar.
Exactly, rather than looking up at the horizon.
You know, thinking about this cult of the rower, it reminds me of an incredibly outdated factory mindset. It would be like trying to measure the brilliance of a novelist solely by how fast they can physically strike the keys on a typewriter.
Oh, that's a brilliant analogy.
Like, imagine looking at an author and saying, wow, 120 words per minute, perfect grammar, and they didn't sleep for 2 days. What a genius.
Meanwhile, the book is terrible.
Right. You aren't even looking at the story they are actually telling or the characters they're building. You're just grading the mechanical output of their fingers. It completely misses the point of what creating value actually means.
And what's fascinating here is how violently the arrival of the steam engine shatters that exact illusion.
It really breaks the spell.
It does. When artificial intelligence, specifically these massive language models and coding agents, comes online, it acts exactly like that steam engine firing up beneath the floorboards. It never tires. It never gets distracted.
Doesn't need to sleep.
No sleep, no weekends, and it definitely doesn't experience burnout. From the very first moment you ignite that boiler, it delivers more thrust, more sheer mechanical output than decades of combined human effort.
It's just staggering when you put it like that.
And overnight, those highly prized, culturally revered skills of the rower, the raw power of memorized algorithms, the perfect syntax, the 4.0 AM grinding, they suddenly lose their market value.
Because the economic reality becomes undeniable. Right.
Right. Why would any company pay a premium for a human to row when the engine does it for practically zero marginal cost?
Man, that is a terrifying thought. If you've built your entire self-esteem around being the fastest rower, hearing that engine roar to life just, like, empties your stomach.
It triggers a real panic response.
Yeah, it leads to this deeply anxious reflex. If the AI can row harder than I can, I just need to row even harder. Mm-hmm. I need to race the steam engine. I need to memorize more, type faster, sleep less.
And the resounding reality is that you do not race the steam engine.
You just can't.
No, you will lose every single time. But this is where the perspective pivots and where the existential dread actually starts to dissolve.
Okay, I'm ready for some good news.
Well, if AI is the ultimate tireless rower, does that mean human beings are now obsolete? No. The historical and logical argument here is crucial. Rowing was never actually the thing that guaranteed a successful voyage in the first place.
Even in the height of the muscle-powered era.
Even then, voyages were never won by rowers alone.
Let's look at the actual math on that, because the physical limits of muscle power are pretty stark.
They are. I mean, consider the biological realities of human performance. Even in the old paradigm, a star performer, like a so-called 10X engineer or star rower, was at their absolute biological maximum, maybe twice as fast as an average one.
Let's be generous and stretch it to three times as fast.
Okay, sure, three times. In the context of pulling an oar, that is a remarkable Olympic-level athletic feat. But over the course of an entire multi-month voyage across an ocean, that tiny extra margin of speed is completely negligible.
It just disappears into the noise.
Exactly. It vanishes entirely if higher level strategic decisions are flawed. Like if the ship goes the wrong way, the speed at which it travels is irrelevant.
That makes total sense. If you have the absolute strongest crew in the world pulling in perfect unison, it doesn't matter if you are hurtling in the absolute wrong direction.
You just get to the wrong place faster.
Right. In tech, this is the classic trap of building a flawlessly coded feature that absolutely nobody asked for. You spend 6 months creating this incredibly complex, beautifully architected system, and then you launch it to zero users.
Your rowers were amazing, but the destination was entirely wrong.
Exactly. That's the first big pitfall.
And it happens constantly. But even if you have the correct destination in mind, the environment itself can defeat a crew of rowers. Imagine the captain steers the ship directly into a path riddled with headwinds, opposing currents, and brutal storms.
That's just going to exhaust everybody.
Right. That environment is going to drain and defeat even the most elite, perfectly synchronized crew. For a software team, that kind of bad routing usually takes the form of technical debt.
Oh, man. Let's unpack that for a second. Drowning in technical debt.
Yeah.
That's basically taking coding shortcuts early on that you have to painfully pay for later.
Exactly. It slows everything down.
It's like building a quick wooden bridge because you're in a rush, but a year later you realize you need to drive a 10-ton truck over it. Instead of rebuilding it properly, you just keep nailing extra planks onto the wood, hoping it holds.
That is a perfect analogy. You are fighting the structural integrity of your own project. All that extra rowing effort isn't spent moving the boat forward toward the destination. It is entirely consumed by just trying to keep the boat from sinking.
So that's the bad routing pitfall.
Yeah. Yeah. And the tragedy of the muscle-powered era is that a team might survive the bad routing. They might survive the storms. They might arrive at the exact correct destination perfectly on schedule and still fail.
Right, because of the cargo. This is the third pitfall. You arrive at the port, you open the hold, and you are carrying something nobody wants to buy.
You delivered on time, but it doesn't matter.
The trip is a complete commercial failure. You've executed a flawless journey to deliver completely unwanted cargo.
Which is, sadly, an incredibly common story in the tech world. Brilliant engineering teams burning millions of dollars and thousands of hours of human life to launch a product that is met with absolute silence from the market.
So what does this all mean? If the rower is essentially powerless to prevent any of those major failures like the wrong destination, the bad routing, useless cargo, does that mean all of that grueling hard work we talked about was just a distraction?
It's a tough question to face.
I mean, the perfect form, the algorithmic mastery, the late nights.
Mm-hmm.
Were we just deluding ourselves into thinking the rowing was the most important part?
It is a really provocative realization, but yes, we are being pushed to accept exactly that. I mean, it wasn't that the hard work had no value. The boats still needed physical motion after all.
Right, before the steam engine, human muscle was the only way to get it moving.
Exactly. But we allowed ourselves to obsess over a stroke rate because it was visible, it was measurable, and honestly, it was entirely within our control.
It's comforting, in a way.
It is. It is so much easier psychologically to focus on typing code faster and cleaning up syntax than it is to grapple with the terrifying, ambiguous uncertainty of whether the market actually wants what you are building. The ore was safe. The ore made sense.
Wow. And now the steam engine takes away that safety blanket. The engine provides the motion, practically for free. So we can no longer hide from those big, ambiguous questions behind the physical exertion of rowing.
Precisely. The burning question for every professional shifts immediately. You stop asking, can I row faster than the AI? And you are forced to ask a much more profound question.
Which is,
can I do anything besides row?
Can I do anything besides row? Man, if you spend 15 years staring at the wood grain of your oar, that is a chilling thought.
It definitely is.
But here's where it gets really interesting and honestly incredibly optimistic. Because once we accept that we can no longer just row, we have to figure out our new place on the ship.
Right, we have to evolve.
We shift from this terrifying problem of obsolescence to the much more empowering solution of job evolution. History shows us that major technological leaps wipe out positions, not people.
This is a vital grounding distinction. The invention of the steam engine did not doom sailors. It didn't empty the oceans of human beings or end the maritime shipping industry.
If anything, shipping exploded, right?
Exactly, it exploded. What it did was entirely reshape the jobs on the deck. When you put a massive, complex power plant inside a ship, the most valuable crew members are no longer the sweaty laborers pulling oars in the dark below deck.
The value moves up.
The value suddenly shifts upward to the specialists who are required to command, control, and direct that new power plant. The ship is faster and more capable, which means it needs sharper, more strategic minds to run it.
So new jobs are created?
Right. There are two specific, newly elevated roles that emerge from the dismantling of the rower's seat.
Okay, so if the rower is gone, someone has to be steering. That means the focus shifts from pulling the oar to actually reading the map. You become a navigator.
Exactly. The AI navigator, their mission is fundamentally about answering the question of where. Where should this incredibly fast, incredibly powerful ship actually go?
Getting your head out of the boat.
Right. Instead of staring at a single oar, the navigator is up in the fresh air using highly sophisticated AI-driven dashboards. They are digesting massive oceans of complex information that a human just couldn't process alone.
Like global market data, shifting technology trends, new legal regulations, user feedback.
All that.
But wait, the AI can process all that data too, right? So what makes the human navigator essential?
Their unique edge is their ability to blend human intuition and empathy with the raw, machine-generated insight of the AI.
Okay, I see.
The AI can find patterns in the data, but it doesn't understand human context. It doesn't know what it feels like to be frustrated by a clunky interface or to be genuinely worried about data privacy.
So if the AI analyzes a bunch of engagement data and suggests, mathematically, that the most efficient way to retain users is to, like, lock them into an impossible-to-cancel subscription maze, the AI thinks it's succeeding.
Right, because it found the optimal mathematical route for retention.
But the human navigator has the empathy to step in and say, no, that's incredibly user-hostile. It will destroy our brand trust in a month. We are not sailing in that direction.
Exactly. The navigator looks at the output of the machine and applies human context, ethics, and long-term vision. They plot a course that is smarter and safer than either the human or the machine could plot alone.
They are the ones avoiding the wrong destination and making sure the cargo has a market. But, you know, knowing where to go isn't enough on its own. I mean, a map doesn't move the boat. The ship still needs to physically get there, and the steam engine needs to be operated. Which brings us to the second role. The AI chief engineer.
Right.
If the navigator is up in the crow's nest looking at the horizon, the chief engineer is deep down in the engine room. They are answering the question of how. How does the ship get to that destination efficiently and safely?
They take that high-level strategic vision of the navigator and translate it into precise, actionable machine instructions that the AI can actually execute.
Which is harder than it sounds.
Oh, it's very difficult. And this is where we confront a massive misconception about artificial intelligence. A lot of people assume that if you have an AI, you just yell your grand demands at it, and it magically does the work perfectly.
Right, like it's a magic wand.
But there is a very specific technical danger here.
Yeah.
The danger of the engine overheating.
That is such a visceral image. The chief engineer knows you cannot just stand next to the boiler and bark, build me a social media app at the AI.
It will completely break down.
Yeah. If you give it a massive, incredibly vague prompt, the system effectively overheats.
Mm.
It lacks structural guardrails.
Yeah.
In tech terms, the AI starts producing hallucinations.
And to understand why it hallucinates, you really have to look at how these models work. They are essentially massive pattern matching engines. They're predicting the most statistically likely next piece of text or code.
But they don't really understand it.
Exactly. They don't have an underlying structural understanding of the software architecture unless you provide it. So if you give the AI an overly broad command, it wanders into a massive space of probabilities.
Making wild guesses.
Right. It might guess a code library that looks plausible but doesn't actually exist, or it might introduce massive security vulnerabilities because it's prioritizing the speed of the output over the safety of the architecture.
That's terrifying.
It will confidently write logic that completely breaks the entire system simply because it doesn't understand the constraints of the real world.
So the chief engineer is the scaffolding builder. They are the person who understands the thermal limits of the engine. They know how to take the navigator's grand vision and break it down into smaller, highly constrained, manageable prompts.
They are keeping it on the rails.
Right. They monitor the outputs. They adjust the valves. They ensure the code being generated actually makes logical sense and fits safely into the broader system. They keep the engine from blowing itself apart.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, what we are really observing is a fundamental restructuring of teamwork. A successful voyage in this new AI era is no longer about 100 rowers pulling blindly in unison.
It's a whole new dynamic.
It is. It is a duet. It is the duet of vision provided by the navigator and craft provided by the chief engineer.
I love that. Vision and graft.
The navigator ensures the massive power of the ship is directed towards something inherently valuable, and the engineer ensures the massive power of the AI is harnessed safely and structurally to actually get them there.
They need each other.
Together. Those two roles, the visionary and the translator, they set the absolute ceiling for what any team or company can achieve in this new landscape.
You know, that duet of vision and craft completely changes how you view your daily work. It is such a massive paradigm shift away from the cult of the rower.
It frees you up, really.
It does. And that brings us to the ultimate takeaway of this deep dive. We've looked at the dread, we've explored the history and the exhaustion of the rower, and we've mapped out the new roles waiting on the deck.
The new horizon.
Yeah. The deepest change that AI brings to your professional life is not a brutal zero-sum fight for survival against a machine. It is not about clinging to your oar and trying to pull harder until your muscles just get out.
That's a losing game.
It is an invitation to upgrade. The rower seat, that entire paradigm of measuring your worth by raw power, perfect syntax, and endless endurance, is simply gone. It has been dismantled to make room for the steam engine.
The machine is here, and the boiler is already lit.
And your choice, as a professional, is actually quite simple. You can either stay chained to the memory of that seat, complaining that the engine is cheating and that the old way was pure, or you can climb the stairs, step out onto the deck, and take on a new role.
Step into the light.
Yeah. Your value to the world no longer depends on your stroke rate. It depends entirely on the responsibility you are willing to take on next. Are you going to be the navigator who points the way? Are you going to be the chief engineer who harnesses the power?
Those are the only two options that matter now.
Exactly. The reality of this technological leap leaves us with one incredibly direct question. Are you ready to leave your seat?
It truly is the defining question of our time for knowledge workers. I mean, embracing that upgrade is the only way forward. But as we transition out of this deep dive, I want to leave you with one final provocative thought to mull over on your own.
Oh, lay it on us.
It's a question that builds on everything we've discussed today, but looks just a little further over the horizon.
Okay, I'm listening.
If the AI era successfully turns all of us from rowers into high-level navigators and chief engineers, what happens to the entry-level experience?
Yeah, that's
right. How do tomorrow's navigators ever learn to read the complex, subtle currents of the ocean? And how do tomorrow's chief engineers truly understand the deep structural mechanics of the ship if they have never actually had to spend time sweating in the rower's seat?